House Committee on Judiciary come to order. Today is February 22nd, 2016. Open a public hearing on and possible work session on Senate Bill 1555A. Call Mr. Campbell and Chief Kearns, please.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, this is Senate Bill 1555A, and it is brought to us by Senator Prozonsky. Certain law enforcement agencies would like to be able to use polygraph examinations as a school tool to screen law enforcement applicants. Several other states currently allow for this use. Oregon law currently prohibits the use of polygraphs as a condition of employment. Senate Bill 1555A amends existing law to allow the use of polygraphs in screening law enforcement applicants. It does not allow its use after employment. The use of polygraphs would also be subject to an applicable collective bargaining agreement. Finally, Senate Bill 1555A exempts polygraph materials from disclosure under public records law. There are no amendments, and there is no fiscal or revenue impact.
Okay, thank you.
Great. Chair Barker and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kevin Campbell. I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Association Chiefs of Police and the Oregon State Sheriff's Association to support Senate Bill 1555. We've introduced this bill before. With me today is Chief Pete Kearns from Eugene. And I wanted to just give a little bit of background regarding our interest in the bill. If you look at Oregon law enforcement right now, we do an excellent job of a number of things. We have an excellent training facility and program. We have an excellent certification program. And in fact, we make sure that officers that should not remain officers because of their conduct are decertified. In fact, we're one of the leading states in decertification. Decertifying on average over the last 11 years, 100 officers per year. That includes police, parole, and probation, and includes corrections. 100 per year, that's a lot. Those are folks that we've made a great investment in. They have been entrusted with some pretty heavy responsibility in terms of carrying a gun, a badge, being able to take away freedoms and enforce the laws. The purpose of this bill is to add what we consider a missing piece of the equation, and that is the most important decision we make in terms of human resources on the police side is who we hire to begin with. Our process in Oregon is extensive. We do really good work when it comes to background checks and interviews, use of a psychologist. You'll hear from one today. We have a number of tools. One of the tools we don't have that our surrounding states have is polygraph for pre-employment. It's different than the use of a polygraph in a court setting. You'll hear from a polygrapher today that's done 25,000 of these. But our concern is this, that if that additional tool, and I say additional tool, this is not a replacement tool. This does not lower the hiring standard. We have no interest in that. It's an additional tool that can catch propensities that the traditional background can sometimes miss, including a propensity for domestic violence, including a propensity for sexual crime. Things that don't always come out, but when they do and it's post-employment, they're devastating. They devastate the police profession. They embarrass police officers. Unions are opposed to this bill, I believe, but they pay the bill to support officers who are in a position now of being challenged because of their behavior. We'd rather have an additional tool that helps us properly hire to begin with. It's just one additional tool. It's not relied on exclusively. It is an addition. So we're hopeful today that you'll have a chance to ask any questions you have about how this works, because I realize that polygraph machines and the whole concept of polygraphs is, there's a lot of it on TV. There's a lot of just images of what it's all about. But I think you'll find that this tool could be very beneficial to us. One last final comment, and then I'll turn it over to Chief Kearns, and that's this. As law enforcement agencies in the state, we're struggling with recruitment. Our hiring pools are shrinking. That means we have fewer and fewer qualified candidates all the time that can successfully navigate our hiring process. And so you might ask the question, why in the world would you add another tool that may even disqualify more? And our answer to that is simple. If we can avoid hiring one police officer that later becomes a risk to the community, we'd rather have the smaller hiring pools and have to work harder to recruit good candidates. And so with that, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm going to turn it over to Chief Kearns, and thank you for the time today on this. I really, really appreciate it.
And thank you, Chief Kearns, for coming back up again.
Oh, you're welcome.
That boring drive.
Thanks so much for having me, Representative Barker and committee members. We're here today really because we've had some disasters in law enforcement since the beginning of, for the last 200 years, law enforcement has not found the trick for screening out those people who've demonstrated in their lives that they have a propensity for certain behaviors that our screening methods aren't able to identify.
And sorry, I'm sorry, Chief, you need to say your name for the record.
My name is Pete Kearns. I'm the Eugene Police Chief, and I'm representing the Oregon Association of Chiefs of Police and the City of Eugene.
Thank you.
In 2006, the International City County Managers Association and the Police Executive Research Forum came to Eugene to conduct an analysis of our hiring and internal affairs processes. And they did this following our prosecution of two of our police officers who were convicted of raping women in our community under the authority of their, under the guise of their positions as police officers. And one of them will spend the rest of his life in prison for that. The ICMA and PERF had more than 50 recommendations for improvements to screening as we hire recruits. And among those was the recommendation that we add polygraph, not as a substitute to any of our screening methods, but in addition to our screening methods. And so we've been working to try and make that a possibility ever since. And since that time, we've arrested another officer in this last year who committed sexually related offenses, propensity for child pornography that we more likely than not would have discovered through the use of a pre-screen polygraph tool. And he created some harm, considerable harm, within our department, where there are seven victims of his violation of privacy. So it is for us the objective of acquiring the ability to use pre-screen polygraph as a very personal one in Eugene, where so many people have been harmed, and I know that we're not the only Oregon community that's experienced this. Police agencies in Oregon, as Kevin mentioned a little bit ago, do an extremely good job of screening candidates with the tools that are available to us, with that begin with interviews and physical testing and thorough comprehensive background investigation. Eugene is one of the few communities that travels to other places to conduct background investigations into police candidates, psychological exam, and then also a medical exam. And the one piece that's missing that you find in most states is this ability to screen with polygraph. So we've invited a couple people to testify today by phone. The first is Dr. Mike Roberts, who conducts the psychological exams for our police recruit process. And he also practices and serves the same function in other states where the polygraph is allowed. So he has a good objective perspective on the value of the polygraph. And the other is a gentleman named Rich Peregrine, who's a chief polygraph examiner for the Northwest Polygraphers Association. He has worked in Washington State, where he has, as a polygrapher, participated in legislative committees with the Washington State Legislature since 1986. He's been a polygrapher since 1984. He was a polygrapher for hiring processes with the Washington State Patrol, and he's conducted more than 25,000 polygraph exams, and he could answer any question you might have and address any fears or concerns you might have about the use or the efficacy of the polygraph. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Prozanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Floyd Prozanski, State Senator, District 4, which does include parts of Lane and Douglas counties. Thank you very much for taking up Senate Bill 1555. This was a bill that I introduced at the request of Chief Kearns and the Chief of Police for Eugene, and it is a bill that we did actually bring forward this last session as well. The chair and I have talked about our differences and somewhat of opinions as to how this may work or what we need to do to ensure that we're, let's say, not forcing anything on any individual or organization. And what I would say is that the approach that we're taking with 1555, I believe, actually will, in fact, provide for something that's more than just one size fits all. It will, in fact, allow for agencies within the communities to decide on which tools they want to use in carrying forward as to the pre-employment, so during the application phase of a person being a candidate for a position of a peace officer. And I think it's important for us to keep in mind is one of the things that is important for us to be able to do is to ensure that only those who are really worthy of getting the opportunity to be sworn police officers actually have the ability to carry out their duties under the color of law without violating other people's civil rights. It's very unfortunate that in my hometown that we have had situations where individuals who have received that designation as being a sworn police officer have in fact misused their authority and their power at the detriment of other individual citizens within our community to the point of where now they are serving time in prison. One of the things I think that's important for us to keep in mind is that if we can in fact keep this from occurring from the beginning, we keep from victimization from occurring. We maintain trust in the community as to ensuring that that the community itself feels that the, in this case, the city is taking every reasonable step that it's possible to ensure that, that someone before they actually become a police officer, before a community actually invest in that individual and putting them through a 16-week training course and then going through all the coaching and mentoring that's required, which, if I remember correctly, takes about 18 months for a individual to be actually out on the road by themselves, that we actually have candidates that actually meet the profile of what we think is the integrity of a man or a woman wearing a uniform of a police officer. One of the things that we have done to ensure that this is not going to be just something that can just be forced into a use as a tool is the ability and the requirement that there's a collective bargaining between management and the rank and file, and that in fact if it's not provided for within the bargaining agreement, that it would not be a tool that would be able to be used. So again, we're looking for balance. We're looking for an opportunity to ensure that those communities who want to have this extra tool to help them separate those who should not be given the opportunity to serve, let alone to actually serve and breach the peace on their own, does not occur. This, I believe, will in fact give us the opportunity. Now, I guess let me say the opportunity to actually dig deeper. During our conversations on the Senate side, there were some individuals thinking that somehow this was going to become a substitute, that this would be actually the tool that would be used almost exclusively to determine whether or not a person is going to be offered a position as a police officer. I can assure you that this is not what will happen. It would be negligent. It would be extremely libelous on a part of a community to be relying on one tool, one that we know has not, at this point, been able to be used in a court of law, but it is one that actually can give indications and indicators that there needs to be deeper background research done in determining as to whether or not a person has a propensity to do something outside of the bounds of the law. So I am here in support of Senate Bill 1555. I do believe we've reached a threshold that will allow for each community to be able to make this decision on their own without being hindered by what one community decides would be forced or required on another. Mr. Chair, thank you very much for
And thank you very much for all the work you've done on this. Okay, thank you.
Yes, I will call now.
Mr. Chair, while you're doing that, if I can excuse unless
please, you have questions. Please do. If I have a question for
not at all, but while we're calling it up, may I make a statement for purpose of legislative history, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. I just wanted to echo the Senator's remarks. No offense, Senator. I'm not sure how valuable your legislative history is in this chamber. I don't know. But seriously, I don't assume that a court gives it too much weight. But
about as an alum of 7 years.
One would think. But I did want to echo that, that this is certainly, to the extent this is passed into law, this is not intended to be a substitute, and that it would be negligent if this were a substitute. This is just, if it passed, it would just be one more tool.
Okay, thank you. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Przanski, I'm looking at the bill itself and reading when I read through it again. I just want to make it real clear on the applicability of the collective bargaining agreement part. They're not members of the collective bargaining, that's just not, doesn't apply.
It doesn't apply to the candidate itself, but it's one of these things that I can only speak from my experience, and I should put on the record, I do prosecution for the city of Eugene in their municipal court. So I do have the opportunity to have conversations with rank and file. And I do believe that there are many people that serve in that department that are very uncomfortable that they have had the unfortunate experience of their badge being tarnished because of actions of others. Mm-hmm. And they feel that this is a tool that they think that management should be able to use in its limited applicability. And again, it's not one that's going to be a substitute. It's just another one that's going to allow for those opportunities to say, I think we need to dig a little deeper on this particular area to make certain that we've got someone that's qualified and it's not going to become an embarrassment and really tarnish the image with the general public.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. Appreciate your time. Okay, go ahead. We'll make the phone calls. Great minds think alike.
I'm Dr. Roberts.
Hello, Mike Roberts.
Hi, Dr. Roberts. This is Jeff Barker. I'm a state representative and chair of the House Judiciary Committee. We have you on speakerphone, so please go ahead and tell us about polygraphs.
Identify himself. Okay.
And you need to identify yourself. Yeah, and you need to identify yourself once more for the record.
Okay, I am Mike Roberts. I'm a clinical psychologist with board certification in police and public safety psychology and clinical psychology. I do the pre-employment screening for the Eugene Police Department, but I also do it for a lot of other agencies on the West Coast, for example, San Francisco PD and San Jose PD, Seattle Police Department, Anchorage Police Department. And we do have clients in Chicago PD, Chicago Police Department, the New York State Police, the Washington, D.C. Metropolitan Police, and more than a couple dozen other agencies around the country. So the experience I have is both with agencies that have the polygraph, which is most of them, and agencies that do not. So when I'm speaking about the polygraph, we have considerable experience with it and do see the advantages of having it, and I'd like to talk to you about that today. One thing I would say in terms of full disclosure is that I have no economic interest in the polygraph or anything associated with it. So if anything, when an agency uses the polygraph, they actually clean up the applicant pool before they get to me, the psychologist, and we get fewer applicants to screen rather than more of them. So I completely believe that it is a major positive in the selection process for law enforcement officers and other public safety people. When it's used in police public safety selection, I think there's a major misunderstanding by a lot of people. In public safety selection, the polygraph is really an information gathering tool. It markedly improves the value of the other character assessment procedures, such as the background investigation and the psych assessment itself. The polygraph is used in the job selection process. It isn't used to determine the guilt or innocence like a criminal investigation. In fact, fewer than 5% of the police applicants are identified by polygraph operators as deceptive, which is like they're lying. Most of those times are because of the flagrant use of what polygraph people call countermeasures. and that would be things like excessive body movement. They shift around in the chair. They intentionally do deep breathing exercises to throw off the other heart rate monitors and blood pressure monitors. They use anti-anxiety drugs before they come into the session. And, you know, in summary, the value of the polygraph is that it is in the admission of negative behaviors by the applicants while they're going through the polygraph process, both on the questionnaire they fill out before they're hooked up to the machine and during the interaction they have with the polygraph operator who is reviewing their answers with them. Those answers, the admission of negative behaviors, are provided to the department's background investigator, and those are used by the investigators to lead to a recommendation to the chief to reject applicants because of those character issues, not because of whatever opinion the polygraph operator had about whether they were truthful or untruthful. Very rarely is a person, in fact, found untruthful and rejected by the department. They typically, polygraph operators, give the applicant a second chance to change their story and sometimes even a third. And even then, the certification by the polygraph operator that they're deceptive is not in itself enough to get them rejected. A couple of other points I'd like to make, 4 points in total, and I've kind of covered one. The results of using the polygraph in the selection process, it actually doubles the negative behavioral admissions, such as arrest history, spouse abuse, job terminations, and a bunch of other hard-to-verify information that the applicants don't disclose. We do testing, again, nationally. We have automated questionnaires that ask them essentially the same questions that the polygraph goes through with them. And what we find out is, if we look at the data, is by separating the agencies into those with a polygraph in the system and those who do not have a polygraph in the system, there is a dramatic doubling of the admissions made when there is a polygraph in the system. You know, one classic that I like to point to is that in Chicago PD, they have an admission rate for the use of marijuana at around 5% by all applicants, which is not believable because the national average is 60% for job applicants for police positions. So 5% in Chicago say they've ever used marijuana. And when they one time decided they were going to institute a polygraph, the very next testing, the result was 60%. So just simply putting the system, having the threat of having it there, the applicants ended up admitting to pretty much the base rate or the standard kind of rate of behavior. They do lie during the process, and we cannot ignore that. If the polygraph on point two is not used, the department, in a sense, will hire applicants who have lied about their pre-hire behavior. And that's important for a couple of reasons. First, the people who have committed negative behavior before being hired, they're at much greater risk of continuing that pattern of violating norms and rules after they're employed as a public safety officer. They'll just do it in the law enforcement context, which can be damaging to the public and certainly embarrassing to the department. They may violate the norms and rules in a different way, but it won't be good. The second reason that it is a concern if you don't have a polygraph is that it's unfair to the job applicants who actually tell the truth about their past negative behavior, and they get rejected. But the applicants with the same exact negative behavior history who lie get hired because of their deception. And that is really just a morally uncomfortable position to be in if you're, you know, trying to be fair to the applicants. The third point is that there is a potential negligent hiring if the applicant who has a negative pre-hire history, and he's hired or she's hired due to their deceptive responses, they lied, but the department didn't have the polygraph, and they essentially weren't exercising what would be considered due diligence by having used a common and, in fact, normative screening methodology that includes the polygraph. It is the norm for police agencies on the West Coast. It's used from L.A. to San Francisco to San Jose to Seattle to Anchorage. I can't think of many West Coast police agencies that don't use it. And in the, across the country, some states like Oregon don't use it, like Minnesota, but they have the same problems that we see in the applicants from Oregon. So we do have a concern about that. We want to have applicants that are as honest as they can be, and having the polygraph and the processes can help that. I realize it's probably not in interest of this discussion, but the use of the polygraph is also cost-effective. It is a relatively inexpensive process, a couple $100, compared to far more expensive background, which is several $1,000s, or a psych that's about $400. There is one thing I'd like to add, if I've made these comments to any of you before, and that is that in the last time I've talked to members of the committee or other people in the legislature, I didn't bring out the more recent use of the polygraph. The fact is, most people don't realize the questions asked by the polygraph operator are under the control of the chief of police. That is, the chief can review the questions, tell them not to ask certain questions, or add certain questions. And we've been actively doing this in California, focusing on some of the issues about the people that are most difficult for backgrounds and psychologists to identify, and those are the people who commit sexual misconduct after being employed as officers because they are pretty good at lying. But if you have the polygraph, you have a better chance of finding them. The other thing is what I mean by sexual misconduct pre-hire would be, say, for example, having sexual contact with minors, children under the age of 14, viewing internet child porn, having sex in the workplace, that kind of thing. And another area, and one that we're exploring, is in fact asking questions about racial and sexual comments or behavior that the applicant has displayed in the workplace before being hired, in the attempt to identify people with a lack of tolerance for other people that they have before they actually get the job as a cop or firefighter. So I know there is an opportunity for questions, and I'm up at that point.
Okay, Representative Olson, please.
Hey, Dr. Roberts, Andy Olson from Albany. I have a couple questions. Pardon me?
Thank you. Yeah. No, I hear you. And you have a question, sir?
I do. You mentioned earlier about cost-effective versus background. So I take it from that comment that you would probably administer the polygraph first before the background.
Yes, these things are complicated, but I would always, I think a more cost-effective approach is to do a pre-offer background, that is to do a preliminary check, and there's a number of tools that can do that, and the department already does this, is to take a look at the things that are non-medical in nature before the department extends a conditional offer of improvement. That would be things like their arrest history, their termination history, their military history, things that are not medical. So it wouldn't address the issues of alcohol use or abuse or lifetime illegal drug use or psychological, psychiatric medication they take or treatment they've had. But then they get the conditional offer of employment. That's when the polygraph should come, is after the COE or conditional offer of employment. If that comes first or right after that, there's an opportunity there to discover new information that you couldn't otherwise ask about because of the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act. And so now all of a sudden you know the person has been a regular user of marijuana or cocaine, and why send them to the psychologist and get charged $400 for having us tell you the same thing, which is there's a problem, and or to a background investigator who's going to spend a week of investigator time, which is expensive.
Just one other question I have then, Dr. Roberts.
Yes.
You mentioned also that that seems to be the norm of agencies up and down the West Coast, except for Oregon, using the polygraph right now for hiring.
That's correct.
Do they, and you also mentioned the chief is generally the one who sets the policy of what those questions are designed to be. What are your thoughts about, for Oregon, if we were to move forward with this bill, if we had kind of a set question or set menu to follow from all the different agencies?
I think that's a very wise choice. And the problem is, the only problem is this, is that I don't know in Oregon, because it's illegal to have the polygraph, but how it would work, because normally they're outsourced to private vendors in California, for example. So you could have a dozen vendors and they would have slightly different question sets. And what we do, or I do as a consultant to the department, and the department can do it itself, but is say, show us your questions, and we insist on them adding certain questions that we know are important to our chiefs, and so they do, because, in fact, they work for the department. In Oregon, if you were doing it and it was police officers that were administering it, I think you could set up a statewide set of standardized questions. The individual chiefs may add unique ones, but yet, or just go with the standard. Yes, I think you've got a good idea.
Thank you.
Representative Greenlee.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Roberts, I'm interested in this notion that the polygraph is not the single factor for people being discharged. Right now, a police department will have a series of background checks and things they do, and they make a decision, yes or no, on a person. Excuse me. The purpose of adding the polygraph is because it will say no at times when otherwise the answer might have been yes. So, I mean, in that case, it turns out to be the major factor that gets people rejected. Am I missing something in that?
Yes, you are. It could work that way, but it doesn't in my experience at all. Again, the polygraph in police selection, public safety selection, is used as an information gathering tool. So they create a polygraph report summarizing the data presented to them, and they have a bottom line about whether the person has been truthful or deceptive. That's the last line of the paragraph, the last paragraph. But that information is something that is considered by the department along with a lot of other data. So they never accept the polygraph operator report as the reason for the failure. It's the admissions that the applicant makes during that polygraph that the background investigator, the department, uses to say they may tell the applicant you failed the polygraph. They didn't really fail the polygraph. They just admitted stuff that the department said, is unacceptable to us.
But there's a non-polygraph process now, and that admits some number of people. The purpose of putting a polygraph into that mix is that there will be less than that number that will be admitted. So, I mean, it seems to me the purpose of adding the polygraph is, in fact, to increase the failure rate, or put the other way, the success rate.
I think we would all be happy if they all provided information that indicated they were good, solid candidates, and we could hire those people. Life would be simple, and it would be good for everybody. But unfortunately, that's not the way it is. There are, at least a quarter of the applicants have done things prior to being considered as a police officer that really should keep them from becoming a police officer. And it's just a question of how we discover that. And if we discover it with the polygraph, which is a couple hundred dollars, then that does save money. But even if money is not the object, the idea is that it's an efficient way to get better information to the background investigator and to the psychologist so they can make their decisions based on accurate data, not just the information provided by the applicant when they feel comfortable lying about it. So I think you're implying that the polygraph, at least in your experience or opinion, is something that is just a pass-fail hurdle, like the background might be, say?
No, I'm not implying that at all. In fact, okay. I'm quite familiar with polygraphs. I'm dealing with the assertion that the polygraph is not being added essentially as the tool for eliminating candidates. I would argue, and maybe it's not a bad idea, but the polygraph is being added as a tool to eliminate candidates. It just doesn't do it all by itself. It does it in combination with other factors.
That's right. Yes, absolutely. It really acts to the information, the data that it provides to the department to make a selection decision dramatically increases their ability to cut the eligibility list or the list of candidates that should be considered and brought forward to the hiring authority.
And Mr. Chair, if I could ask another question.
Please, go ahead.
In your experience, how frequent is it that somebody will fail in the polygraph? You say it's not yes, no, but their indications, their body language, their answers, their whatever, let me finish my question, if I may.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was interested in the extent to which your experience says that when somebody has raised a red flag, let's say, in a polygraph, they end up being hired on the job.
That it can happen, and what happens typically is that, again, the polygraph operator could indicate that they were deceptive. They were reviewed once again over the problem areas, and they tell you what those problem areas are, like drugs or arrest history, and they were still deceptive. If that happens a second time, and then the department looks at it, and they have any indication that the person has been so that's about 5% of the time. Of 100 people, 5% of them will come through as being regarded as deceptive by the polygraph operator. Of that 5%, almost always that individual has also behaved in a deceptive way during the background or the psych, so that out of that 5%, maybe one or two get hired, but the other half or more have been deceptive in other parts of the selection process, and together that's enough to keep them out.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any further questions?
Please.
Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Roberts, if I speak at this level, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
My name is Brent Barton. I represent Oregon City and Gladstone. In Gladstone, we're still going through quite the scandal involving a murder-for-hire plot, et cetera. I'm very sympathetic to the intent behind this bill. I'm curious if, aside from anecdote, there's any good data to suggest that the use of polygraphy yields different outcomes. For example, Los Angeles, they themselves are going through a significant scandal right now involving police misconduct. Polygraphs don't seem to have made a difference there. Do we actually know that this is going to change outcomes?
Well, that's a very good question. From my experience in agencies across the country, I know that the quality of the overall hired law enforcement group is better when the polygraph is in the system, and that's a general impression. It's not hard research, but it's there. I've worked with other agencies like Washington, D.C. PD and New York State Police and Chicago PD to introduce the polygraph because of the problems they had not having it. They have so many problem officers. It's a higher proportion than they feel comfortable with, and so they adopted the polygraph, and that's only in the past few years for Chicago and D.C. But to answer your question, I think that the result is that it is likely to decrease the incidence of negative behavior. It's not going to eliminate it, absolutely not, And we don't know how it's going to display itself. We, you know, it could be sexual misconduct. It could be something like use of murder for hire or whatever. But the thing to remember about LAPD is that they did not adopt the polygraph until relatively recently. So out of the 7,000 sworn officers, they have a backlog of thousands of them that never had the polygraph. So we don't really know who was involved in their particular problems. In the period, for example, when they got into a lot of trouble about 5 years ago, they definitely, none of them were screened by the polygraph at that point. And so I guess I would say that, in my opinion and the opinion of other people that have exposure to the police agencies, we all feel more comfortable if the polygraph is part of the system. It's only one part, but it really helps by itself, and it's a contributor to the veracity of information the rest of us use when we're making our decision.
Mr. Chair, may I ask another question?
Yes.
This isn't so much a follow-up, so much as it's a completely different question. And I should acknowledge that my question is coming from what I'd say is a relative skeptic about the reliability and accuracy of polygraph tests generally. I can see that there's good literature to suggest that they are, in fact, better than chance, but I don't know if the literature supports the conclusion that they're much better than chance. With all due respect, of course. To the extent, I even assuming, let's pretend that they're not accurate at all, they're just chance. I concede that there's a benefit in the self-reporting. For example, you used, I think, an example from Chicago Police Department and self-reporting use of marijuana. There's a certain deterrence value that gets people to self-report, and that is valuable in and of itself, even if it's just placebo. However, I wonder if there isn't also a cost to that. For example, agencies themselves, management, might actually perhaps be less vigilant after there are hires because they might actually assume that these things are perhaps more reliable than they are. Can you speak about that? Is that a legitimate concern? Have you ever noticed anything of that nature?
I don't believe that is the case. I think that they are very vigilant. The police management really know the limitations of the polygraph, and I certainly do too. There is no research that indicates they do a hell of a lot better than chance in terms of truth or, you know, in determining whether a person is telling the truth or not, and that's why it isn't allowed in a court of law for making a guilty decision. But see, that's not the issue. It's as you said, it's the information that's provided when it's included as part of the selection process. People are much more honest. For example, I mentioned the one in Chicago. There's another one from closer, the Washington State Patrol. I heard from a good source in the patrol that they, when they have the polygraph, they get 10% of the applicants admitting they've had sex with farm animals. Now, I mean, you'd never find, if you didn't have the polygraph in the system, you'd never find out that that was the case. You know, a lot of places we don't ask that question, but they do. And, you know.
What do they make of the results in that case?
And they're pretty amazing results, but what do you make of the results?
Yeah.
Well, that's the interesting thing is that, of course, if you talk to somebody in L.A. or New York, they're not going to have much opportunity to have sex with a farm animal, but maybe the rural parts of, you know, the real issue, that what you make of it is it's what we call boundary.
Depends on how old the animal is.
This is great. This is just
great. You're going to have sex, that's fine, but you don't do it in somebody else's workplace. You know, you don't have a UPS driver going into your bathroom and masturbating or, you know, choosing to have sex in the department after hours or something like that. Because what happens is if they violate one kind of rule and norm, they're more likely to violate others, and it just keeps on going. We have done the research on it. We know that people who smoke a lot of dope or they're more likely to use the other drugs, they're more likely to get involved in spouse abuse, they have more job terminations, they have more arrests, and it just all clusters together. People who violate one norm are more likely to violate others. And so the polygraph lets us establish that, yep, they're not only violating, you know, whatever it is, the animals or sex in the workplace, but by God, there's a bunch of other stuff there that makes them look like not the kind of person we want as a cop.
Thank you, Dr. Roberts.
Yeah, I would just say that in Oregon now, the voters have just approved marijuana. It's legal here, so you're going to have a lot of people smoking a lot of dope. And I don't know that we're going to be able to say that's not a good thing or not.
Mr. Chair.
I'll let you finish your question. I'm sorry.
No, that was a statement. It's not really a question, but that you keep referring to the marijuana is drugs, and unfortunately, Senator Prozanski left. He would probably have a very different view of that, more so than I do.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, I was just going to mention that I doubt that portion is going to be on the Sign and Die video.
Doctor, I wish you wouldn't drop those lines in front of me. I'm having things are dropping out of my brain on my tongue, and I'm swallowing them today rather than adding to them. If you knew me better, you'd understand that. But anyway, so okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
We haven't heard the end of this one yet. Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much for your testimony today, and we'll move on to our next call. Thank you, Dr. Roberts.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for the opportunity. Appreciate it. Bye bye.
Those guys were bragging about them.
Mr. Chair?
Maybe that's what Krieger keeps talking about. He's not here today, so.
Where is Krieger when you need him?
He was a game one.
Whoever thought of asking that question?
Yeah, that was.
Hi, this is State Representative Jeff Barker, Chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. You're on the air, so if you would like to talk about polygraphs for us, we appreciate it.
Okay, well, thank you for calling, and thank you for letting me be part of your committee hearing.
Can you guys...
You
need to identify yourself for the record.
My name is Richard Peregrin, E-R-E-G-R-I-N. I'm a retired state trooper from Washington State and a private polygraph examiner and retired from military criminal investigations.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
My background here is with peace officer certification with Washington State. Now, I know that this is the main issue with your committee now. The Washington State RCW is 43.101.095, which requires peace officers to be certified with a few basic steps. One requires a background investigation, criminal history investigation, psychological examination, and a polygraph examination. I think the important thing for the committee to know and understand is that the polygraph results are not the primary or only issue used to reject an applicant. It is not the sole determining factor in the hiring process. It's used in conjunction with all the other steps in the process to evaluate the applicant's suitability. Now, with the polygraph, we have a four-phase hiring process. And very briefly, phase one is a written examination and a physical fitness test. Phase two involves a pre-employment polygraph and a background investigation. Phase three is an oral board examination. Then phase four is a medical examination, psychological test, psychological interview. Each one of those phases will weed out people that are not suitable to be a peace officer. And each phase is incrementally more expensive. So it's a cost-saving issue in the way that we have it stacked for our concerns up here. Now, I know that the committee is interested in issues of reliability as far as the polygraph is concerned, and I can give some basic information. I wish I could be present for this. I'm sorry that I'm not. I'm in Southern California right now. But the reliability of the polygraph, at this point in time, the polygraph is the only truth verification application in the world today that has been researched and researched and researched. Starting back in 1980, the OTA report first came out with some criticism of polygraph science. Then in 2003, The National Academy of Sciences report was critical of areas of polygraph which affected the accuracy. It was the scientific issues that were involved. So then what the National Academy did, they did their job very well. And the polygraph industry also thought they did their job fairly well, which was to review and be critical of science applications. And it showed where changes had to be made. The American Polygraphic Association embraced and implemented many of the changes that the National Academy of Sciences came up with, including increasing education, continued education for examiners, reviewing and upgrading the testing techniques, changing testing formats to match research, upgraded and changed the testing evaluation process. And so they embraced the report and used it to upgrade their protocols. Then came along 2011 when the American Association of Forensic Sciences also reported their research and had some additional criticism. However, the important thing is that the research with the scientific community and the polygraph community changed where they were very, very similar now over the past 23 years. So the American Polygraph Association and the scientific community are very close to the same reliability percentages. Polygraph reliability is in the high 80s to 90s range. Pre-employment polygraph screening is in the mid-80s, around 85% accuracy and reliability. So the polygraph is still the most accurate truth verification technique in the world today. But the polygraph is the most, or one of the most researched forensics being used in criminal justice today. Nothing is 100%. And an example that might help clarify things: electronic screening at airports has an accuracy of about 85% on finding water bottles and luggage. It's a scientific instrument that they're using to detect that. It's not 100%, but it increases their ability to make better decisions and avoid problems. Now, pre-employment screening of peace officers is also around 85% accuracy. And what it does is it increases the likelihood of hiring a good applicant from somewhere around 6%, and it boosts it up to about 30%, which means quite a bit. It also has an impact on lawsuits generated by applicants that should have never been put in a position of authority or worn a badge. And we'll give an example. My agency was hiring a trooper applicant who failed his polygraph. Now, this wasn't going to necessarily keep him from becoming a trooper. But after the examination, as about 90% or more of the people that do fail will confess, and so it basically confirms the deceptive result. But after he disclosed he was involved in a two-year-old homicide, where the victim was listed as a missing person and the body was recovered maybe 2 days later near the Columbia River, this guy was going to be a trooper. And we also have an issue that happened with the Oregon State Police. Washington State had a homicide in Ocean Shores, and a polygraph examiner was hired to test several people regarding the death. One person drove up from Klamath Falls and failed the test. He confessed to killing the person after the examination. The problem was that he was a cadet ready to go to the next academy class with the Oregon State Police, and had passed all the other phases of hiring for OSP. We routinely find sex crimes, drug dealing crimes, burglars, thieves, and drug problems through the polygraph. But each phase is looking for suitability, honesty, and integrity. And they get an aggregate score. So the polygraph, I would say we're pretty routinely weeding out probably 15 to 20% of people that have already gone through phase one. And when they come through phase two, then they're going to the oral board. And failing a polygraph doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be discounted as an applicant. A lot of times the people are going to disclose what has caused them to fail the test. they're retested, they pass, and they go on with the hiring process. So the suitability, honesty, and integrity that we're looking for, the process that we use for testing these applicants is not is done in a way that to alleviate their apprehension. They're informed of every process along the way. It's a very the examiner does get a very good rapport with the applicant prior to the exam, and it's not as intimidating as someone would think that has never done the test themselves. The questions for the examination are reviewed with the person beforehand. All of his data that he furnishes as far as his written documents that he brings in with him are gone over ahead of time so that he can make any changes he needs to or any omissions that he's made. And then the test is administered. Then after the exam, that is just thrown into the pool for the background investigation to help alleviate any problems that may have come up. And in many cases, we find out that it was not a problem that's going to cause him to be stopped as an applicant to be a state trooper. But in other cases, it is. So if the committee has any questions they'd like to ask me, the validity of the polygraph right now is about the highest it's ever been. And it's because of some of the research that has been done by independent agencies that have helped highlight areas that needed to be needed repair, and those have been completed. So at this point, we've been very successful in Washington with it. The other states that, that we communicate with have also been very successful with it, and they have also stayed out of a lot of lawsuit problems and people that have been involved in major, major crimes wearing a badge going into somebody's house when they're not there. So if I can answer any questions for the committee, I'd be happy to.
Okay. I'll ask you one that when Dr. Roberts just talked to us, he said in Washington you have a 10% failure rate of people that are having sex with animals. Is that a correct statistic?
I have not heard that statistic. There's a guideline with this because there became a time when sex with animals was not a crime. It's only been a crime in Washington State for a few years, resulting in an incident that happened in Enumclaw where a person was using a ranch as kind of a place for people that had that type of sexual activity on their mind they could go to, and then it wasn't an illegal thing to do. So
we outlawed
it wasn't
that. Illegal. We outlawed that in Oregon. We just outlawed that last time that you can't own the ranch even. So, okay, thank you. That statistic just didn't sound right to me. Representative Greenland.
Hi. You talked about the validity and the reliability, which of course are two different issues. You have some. How does that 85%? Break down in terms of true positives, true negatives, false positives, and false negatives, because a false negative in some way has cost agencies as well with the difficulty in recruiting.
False positives and false negatives are always an issue, and that's why when we upgrade our protocols, which we did through some of these prior research programs, they reduce the false positive or false negatives. But also, when you have a false positive or false negative, that's why the oral interview is done after the examination, because in many cases, those are cleared up. And in some cases, they're not cleared up. And then they're retested with what is called a specific issue test, which is more direct, and it will either clear them or not clear them.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any further questions? Well, thank you. Your numbers of the accuracy are higher than I've ever seen anywhere else, and I'll be interested in doing a little more research on that. So I really thank you a lot for your time. We really appreciate it, and your expertise is valuable to us. So thank you. Thank you again.
Okay. Well, good luck with your committee.
Thank you. Next we'll call Scott Winkles and Andy Smith. Go ahead, Andy, please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Andy Smith, representing the City of Portland, here today in support of Senate Bill 1555. Chief O'Day's testimony is on OLIS, so I'll just touch on some of the high points. You know, polygraphs are not the be-all, end-all of human resource tools, but they are a valuable part of a multi-step pre-employment screening process. And our pre-employment process includes an entry-level test, an oral board interview, and a statement of personal history, psychological inventory and personal history questionnaire, a physical abilities test, a background investigation, a psychological evaluation, and a medical evaluation. And this process will not change if Senate Bill 1555 becomes law. And just to highlight the impact of not having polygraphs available here, in Oregon, 30% of applicants admit to drug use during background investigations. In California and Washington, where polygraphs are used, those percentages range up to 50 to 60%. This suggests that applicants are more inclined to vet details with hiring agencies if they know they have to verify their personal information via polygraph. In addition, we're seeing applicants call Portland Police Bureau, inquire about the use of polygraphs, and then ask for recruitment dates when the answer is no, we do not use them. Similarly, we're seeing applicants who are screened out of contention in California and Washington coming to Oregon to look for work. And we have a really strong interest in hiring talented officers who are culturally competent, ethically, physically, and emotionally fit for duty. So we would urge you to pass or move Senate Bill 1555 and give us the ability to add polygraphs to our pre-employment process so we can have the same heightened employment standard as our neighbors to the north and to the south. Thank you.
Okay, so Mr. Smith, can you ask Washington or California when somebody, you know, somebody's failed the test, can you call them up and say what happened?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure if the Portland Police Bureau, you know, calls Washington or California if they get an applicant from there. I'm just, you know.
But I mean, you're saying that they failed that and didn't come here. How do you know they failed that?
Mr. Chair, this is information that I've gotten from Police Chief O'Day and others at the Police Bureau who have experience dealing with applicants.
Okay, thank you. Scott.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Scott Winkles and I represent the League of Oregon Cities. I'm appearing in support of Senate Bill 1555. Cities employ the vast majority of the police officers working in the state of Oregon, and we're very concerned about bad officers slipping through the process. I do want to lay the committee. League of Oregon Cities and Association of Oregon Counties operate jointly a organization, an insurance provider, City County Insurance Services, that's designed to do, among many other things, manage risk for small and mid-sized cities outside of the self-insured, larger self-insured entities. I can conceive of no scenario where CIS would condone or allow or encourage any city to skimp on a background process because this bill passes. This is an added tool. We do know that we employ a number of incredibly talented, dedicated police officers, but we also have to recognize that we are getting some officers slipping through the cracks of a very thorough background investigation. What we have seen from the legislature in the last couple of years are some requirements and some concerns in regards to racial profiling and other issues. It is perfectly justified for the legislature to be concerned about those issues, but what we have not seen from the legislature is any additional tool to screen out problem actors before they get hired or to dismiss. This clearly isn't relevant to the dismissal, but giving us an additional tool to keep a problem officer, a potential problem from the ranks, would certainly help and coincide with those efforts. With that, I'm eager for your questions.
Thank you. I would say that I'm sure Representative Springer, as well as Representative Olson, myself, have been around embarrassing situations that have been horrific, and we, you know, I can guarantee I don't like that when you have a cop go bad. It's anything but good. But anybody else have any questions before I go ahead, Barton, Representative Barton? Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, my question is coming from someone who's fairly skeptical of the reliability and accuracy of these devices and this method. Pretend for a moment But again, I also concede that there is a certain self-reporting effect that seems to be real, and I'm trying to weigh that. Let's pretend that prospective police departments, when screening employees, used a so-called truth serum that, in fact, was just saline serum. There's no real truth serum that I know of. It would, in fact, have kind of that same self-reporting effect, but obviously has no scientific reliability whatsoever. Do you think that would be an appropriate tool? I'm just wondering how much of this question we're asking ourselves actually depends on the accuracy of polygraphs whatsoever.
Chair Barker, Representative Barton, I'm not sure I accept the comparison. I think a polygraph tool that demonstrates, a polygraph, if I understand the technology correctly, would demonstrate some indication that the person has been deceptive or dishonest. There is a document
slightly better
to look
than chance,
slightly,
yeah.
Well, that data appears to be somewhat conflicted. What would then happen if a follow-up, and I think we heard testimony that they're given a second or a third chance followed by an interview, and that this wouldn't be the deciding, this, no one's going to get screened out what we're going to hear because of this answer. They're going to get screened out because they were truthful during the process and admitted to something that was a disqualifier. I'm not sure how this would be administered. This drug or saline would be administered, or what?
In law school, we call that fighting the hypothetical. Okay, forget about the hypothetical. Let's pretend for a moment that we or some of us don't believe that this is an accurate or useful test in and of itself. But again, I can see that there's data. People are more likely, if they know they're facing a polygraph, to self-report certain information. But pretend the underlying test is not actually an accurate test. Is it still good public policy to use this? I just thought, sure, of it when you were up. If you want to get back, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but
Chair Barker, Representative Barton.
You don't say he's on the spot.
Really? I think you did, actually. But that it is an inducement to honesty. And we know that agencies that are using this get a different, statistically get different answers than we do. I think this makes it sound public policy. And I will tell you that when I was a reserve deputy sheriff, I knew a gentleman who worked for the officer, and I use that gentleman in the most sarcastic way possible, that I could have been on his background investigation, and I would have said that he was a young man with all of the liabilities that come with that, but he wasn't a bad, but I had no knowledge of him being a bad person. He turned out to be an office deputy sheriff who pressured women into performing sex acts while in uniform. That there may not be a statistical difference, but I think if we were able to find something that screened Chris out of the pool, I think it would have had a profound impact on a lot of people's lives, and they would have avoided a tremendous amount of trauma.
It certainly would. I wish we had such a tool, Mr. Chair.
That's the question.
Exactly.
I can't quite get to this point yet. I'm still having trouble. The statistics of 85% accuracy, I just have to really look into that. That's far and above anything I've ever heard. Dr. Roberts said he had anecdotal information that the departments that polygraphed had less problems. I've talked to an attorney who says that there is no difference. He doesn't believe in all the cases he's seen. So anyway, I don't want a bad cop, probably more than anybody sitting up here. But I don't want to be excluding people with a system that may be really inaccurate. But anyway, so any further questions? Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. Kimberly McCall, please.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is Kimberly McCullough. I'm here on behalf of the ACLU of Oregon. I think that actually quite a bit about what I was going to say has actually already been said by various committee members. But just to actually put some testimony on the record, our concerns really do stem from the concern that's been raised repeatedly about the inaccuracy of polygraphs. And my understanding is that in particular in employment screening, polygraphs are more inaccurate than they are in other contexts, because the accuracy depends on whether or not you're asking about a very specific event or you're asking these broad general questions. And so when you ask someone, you know, did you do this on this day at this time, you're going to get a more accurate result than have you ever done this in the past. And so that's why in the employment context, this is particularly problematic. And, you know, the inaccuracy or the difficulties with polygraphs is something that's been very, very long documented as early as 2002. I think the study was actually brought up earlier. The Department of Energy actually commissioned a study with leaders in the scientific community to assess whether that they should be used to screen employment personnel, security employment personnel for the Department of Energy. And their conclusion was unequivocal that they should not. I think one of the other points I just wanted to make is a point that has been made here already, which is this: if we have a tools in our tool belt and one of them is broken, one of them is going to potentially lead us the wrong direction, then the question is, should we really have that broken tool in our tool belt? And I do understand the sort of question of, well, what if it doesn't matter that the tool is broken because the tool might lead us to get more accurate examples? And I think that there's some danger to legitimizing the use of polygraphs in any context because they're inaccurate in all contexts, right? And so, you know, we've chosen not to use them in the state of Oregon in the employment context. We've chosen not to use them in courts of law, but we do use them in some other contexts still, because there is unfortunately, there's still something that's being relied upon. And I think there's a lot of people in the public who think that they work the way they do on Law and Order, which is just not true. And so we have deep concerns about legitimizing their use. So I suppose that's just about all I'd like to say. But just, you know, we do understand the intention behind this is good, and certainly understand that this is a complex issue. But because of our concerns about the use of polygraph just in any context, that's why we oppose this bill.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay, thank you. I just want to say that, as I mentioned before, I'm very skeptical of them as well. There's been some things said today that I would like to look into more, and I would think that maybe next session of the legislature that we should take another look at it and have a work group to try to really go through these things and look at it, because the information I've seen, and I've been trying to look some of this up, is that the scientific evidence shows that guilty individuals can easily defeat a polygraph with minimum training, and the rate of failure for an innocent individual can approach 50%. So just basically, Congress has banned, I made a few notes here, Congress has banned polygraphs for most employment settings because they're too unreliable a tool upon which to make employment decisions. And that Department of Energy case is 2003. The Oregon legislature has done the same thing for many years. Polygraph technology is essentially unchanged over the last 50 years. States that allow polygraphs for police have never been shown to have any better hiring results than those who ban them. And right now, as Mr. Campbell mentioned, we have a national recruiting crisis for police. It's the worst in our lifetime. And as an example, when I was head of the police union, patrolman union in Portland, the Police Council. Officers Association, we required a bachelor degree for the job, and today they ask for a GED because they just can't get an applicant pool. So I'm going to thank you very much.
The reason I was raising that false positive, false negative is you can very easily pick out everybody who's guilty by saying everybody is guilty. Then you get a lot of them wrong. You get a lot of false positives, but you get all the true positives as well. And that 85% may be right in picking out every one of the 85% you pick. are guilty, but also a lot of the ones that you didn't pick are not guilty. I mean, who you did pick are not guilty. And I think that's an important issue.
It is.
The difference between the false positive and the false negative.
And we still, I mean, I'm still willing to look at this, but not, it's just a little bit too short this time. And so I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1555. And I want to say before we quit, assuming people who run for office are reelected, they'll be back. I want to say goodbye and thank you very much to Representative Vega Peterson, who came in here, took the place, and she's done a great job, and to my favorite Harvard attorney, Representative Barton, who's been a real asset over the years. Yeah, I will miss him. And over the years in judiciary, I remember the first meeting we had when he and Jefferson Smith, some poor guy from the Bar Association, came up to testify on a non-issue, and he ripped his head off. I had explained to him that wasn't how we conducted committee meetings here in Oregon.
It was a courtroom.
Yeah, it was. But anyway, thank you very much. I'm going to miss you, and I'm going to miss Representative Vega Peterson as well. I'm expecting to see glorious things from her in Multnomah County, where both my daughters live. With that, we'll adjourn. Thank you, committee. And this will probably be the end of our hearings. We're going to have some informational onlys after this. Onlys after this.